thank you for joining us today. I know on the phone we have an update with Mike about the fire on the Hill. Mike, can you hear me?
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well today. Happy 4th of July, everyone.
Can you tell us what's going on up there?
Certainly. On the Bighorn Fire, we increased our containment from yesterday. We were yesterday at 58% containment. We've bumped that up to 73% containment now.
Awesome.
For folks that are looking at a map, most of that containment, additional containment, came over on the northwest side. And I apologize if I butcher any of the names here, but in the Sunderland Wash and Samyango Peak area, there was a section of containment line that we weren't confident on, and it's held for a couple days now, and so we've gone in and done some additional work to make sure that that's secure. So that's one of the areas that increased our containment from yesterday. So we've got the increase in containment. We've got personnel. Folks will notice our personnel are starting to drop off a little bit. So as the work is not needed for them, we try to right-size the organization and make those resources available to go back to the home units, get refurbished and repaired, and get some rest and get ready for the next set of fires that will be coming through, not only here in Arizona but across the country. Also, today will be the last shift of the Northern Rockies Incident Management Team that has been assigned to the fire. We work 14-day shifts, and so they transitioned out to the end of the shift today. And then tomorrow morning, the Southwest Area Incident Command Team 4 will take command of the fire and will continue on as long as needed. So, folks, if you are concerned that we're dropping off in our numbers, it's just because of the hard work and accomplishments that we've created over the last several weeks and making sure that those resources that aren't needed on the fire are available for other stuff. But we still have plenty of people here working. We still got a lot of work going on the fire, especially in the northern flanks of the fire. We've got some chipping operations where they've cut brush and done some fuel reductions in that area. They've got chipping operations in there to reduce that fuel load and get it down on the ground so it's not as flammable. And we're also doing some suppression rehab up in that Pepper Sauce group, in the Pepper Sauce Canyon area. Of the uncontained fire, portions of the fire are still on the southern flank, just below Summer Haven area in the, I think it's called the Palisade, the Saddleback Drainage. I'm not from the area, so I'm quickly learning.
That's okay. I crucify all those words, too.
Yep. So it's in the Apache Spring Mud Spring where the fire has been backing down the mountain there. We'll still continue to monitor that. As the incident commander said at the community meeting last night, some of that area is just steep terrain. There's no need to put fire crews in there. Fire is just backing down slowly. If not, in some spots, it's not even moving at all. So there's no need to put the added risk of putting fire crews in some areas just to get that area out. So we'll continue to work and monitor that. But we've made good progress over the last several days. That moisture we had 2 days ago, the humidity increase and the little shots of moisture suppressed fire activity. So the fine fuels, those grasses, aren't as receptive and aren't able to burn that and move that fire from one clump of grass to the next. And that may change over the next couple of days. I think the meteorologist has mentioned that we're supposed to be getting a warm, dry trend over the next several days here.
Unfortunately.
And, that's not going to affect any of the containment lines we already have in place. But people may see an increase of smoke and fire activity on the interior of the fire because if you look at a map, and I know this is radio, so folks, if you go to our NC website, you can pull down and download all the maps that we've got. But not everything that's shown in the perimeter of the fire is actually burned yet. So we have pockets of fuel that may have not burned, and so as things dry out, folks may still continue to see smoke up on the mountains. But those are all interior of our fire perimeter.
Okay, you said the Southwest is going to be taking over after you guys leave. Where are they from? Arizona?
They're from here in Arizona. Okay. Yeah, Southwest Area Incident Management Team. They were actually I've only been here for a few days, but my understanding is they were here initially before the John Pearson incident commander came in and took over, and then that Type 1 team did its 14 days. The Northern Rockies, its Type 1 team, just finished their 14, and so it's going back to a smaller organization. And so the IC that is incoming incident commander was here initially. So
okay,
and is from the area and knows the resources.
Well, we appreciate all the hard work you guys have done. I know we couldn't have done this without everybody who has been involved, all the Colorado, Yuma, New Mexico, California, everybody. And
yeah,
we just really appreciate you being here.
No problem. You know, the way the system is set up is that, you know, you might have had somebody describe this before, but the Northern Rockies Incident Management Team, they came down. You know, I know the Southern Area Team has gone up and visited and worked on fires up in the Northern Rockies and Montana, Idaho. So the system, it may not be just that folks are from a particular area geographically with the team, but within fire, we move around a lot ourselves. You know, people have different duty locations at different points of their career. So, you know, a lot of people have had experience over different geographic and fuel types. So when you have teams coming in from out of area, it actually just, you know, helps bolster the knowledge base of the fire management and the incident command system.
That's awesome. And I appreciate you guys. I want you to have a safe 4th of July. Tune into our radio show. We've got a surprise for you guys.
Okay, that sounds great. And just a reminder to everybody that it is 4th of July weekend, and while this fire, you know, we're making good progress on it, just everyone be careful out there and don't give our firefighters any additional work.
Yes, please.
Somewhere else in the area.
Please. Yes. Okay, well, thank you, Mike, for calling in, and thank everybody there for us, okay?
Certainly will. I'll pass that on. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Sometimes we need a reminder that this is America, and regardless of local and global events, just living here makes us the luckiest people on earth. Last week, I had search and rescue on. Steve Chuk was born on the 4th of July. I don't think he's as old as America, but for all our men and women across the country who proudly wear the blue, our firefighters, our hotshots, Border Patrol, our doctors and nurses, our amazing military, Katie Mosley, who is a sophomore at South Point High School, has come in to sing our national anthem. Katie, the floor is yours.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming. And the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave?
Awesome. I've got goosebumps. Awesome. That's amazing. Okay, I want all you listeners out there to know that when she's on The Voice or what's that other show, you heard her here first, okay? Katie, how old are you to begin with?
I'm 15.
And you are in theater.
Yes.
You love theater. You're in South Point.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the production that got postponed.
Well, our production is The Addams Family, and we were almost going to perform, and then we got shut down the week before we were about to. And we're hoping it'll still go on, but we just...
Was this as a freshman?
Yes.
Okay, so you've had the whole summer to keep rehearsing.
Yes.
So you're prepared.
Oh,
if they call you today, You're in.
Yes.
Okay. Well, are you? Well, you're going to college. Everybody goes to college, right? You're going to college. Are you going to major in theater?
I'm hoping to. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Don't stop singing. You have an amazing voice.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for getting up early, coming in here, and giving us all a much needed shot in the arm. Hear our national anthem again. Thank you so much. And thank your mom, Stephanie, for being here and handling my phone that keeps ringing. Okay. I'm going to let you guys leave because I know you've got better things to do. And we have Kim on the phone. Kim Challender is running for Pima County Recorder. And I don't know if she can sing or not. Kim, can you hear me?
I have a huge lump. That was beautiful. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
No, and you do not want me to sing at all.
Follow that one, Kim. Okay.
No, not a chance.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Have a good day. Okay. All right. They're leaving the studio, so I'd say goodbye. Kim, what's going on? What do we need to do so that we can all be a part of this voting process in the... I think
all
it's
right.
August, isn't
so
it?
It is. August 4th is the August primary election. So that's coming up really soon. But we also have early voting that starts on Wednesday. And voter registration deadline is Monday. So, and that's July 6th. So that's the important date right now is July 6th. If you're not registered, make sure you get registered or you won't be able to vote in the August primary election. So you can do that a couple different ways. You can go to servicearizona.com. That's the Motor Vehicle Division, the MVD site. And if you have an ID or a driver's license, you can go on there. And it's super easy to register. It's about 2 minutes, actually, to register to vote on that site. So that would be your first option. Call the recorder's office. That recorder's office number is 520-724-4330. If you have any questions, give them a call. They'll be open Monday, 8 a.m., and the customer service for the recorder's office is amazing. So you can give them a call and ask them anything you need to ask them.
Okay, and if you're an independent like me?
Oh, if you're an independent, you need to choose what party ballot you want. So it's an open primary. Independents are allowed to vote, but they need to choose their party ballot. So you have Democrat, Republican, and the Green Party may have a ballot out there also. So it's just the parties that are...
authorized,
registered with the state of Arizona. By the state of Arizona. So, and okay. Libertarians also have a primary, but that is a closed. They choose a closed primary, so you can't get one of their ballots unless you're actually a Libertarian.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you calling in and giving us a reminder. Everything that's going on right now, and Monday's the day. You do it or lose it.
Monday's the day. Yeah, and then the ballots will be starting to be mailed out on July 8th.
Okay.
So that's Wednesday. So if you're on the permanent early voting list, Pebble, you'll be getting it, I'd say, by the 13th. You should have your ballot. If you don't, again, the same number, 520-724-4330. Give them a call, and they'll see what's going on. If there's a delay on your whatever, if you're an independent and you hadn't chose a party or what the issue may be. So.
Okay. I love the early ballot and mail-in ballots. It's awesome. I've been doing it for a long time. And you haven't
and
lost one
safe.
Yet. Yes, it is safe. Regardless of what you hear, it's safe. So
It is safe, secure, and especially in this time of COVID, it's just a better route, really.
Exactly.
And you can check on the recorder's website. You can check the progress of your ballot right there on the recorder's website, which
you
is
watch it go through the system.
Yep.
So. Okay. Okay, Kim.
Okay.
You have a great 4th of July. Stay safe. And this is a great time. If you see law enforcement or firefighter or military, say thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Sherry.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Okay. I'm going to introduce our next guest right after our break, and we're going to take a quick 2-minute break, and we'll be right back. Getting a reverse mortgage with the new rules and expanded limits can be a positive, life-changing experience. The reverse offers multiple ways of having your equity work for you, from a monthly income, an interest-bearing equity account, or a total cash out. Give me a call and let's see which reverse option best works for your future plans. Call 520-310-9900. Ask for me, Sherry. That's 520-310-9900.
To report suspected human trafficking, please call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center at 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP or INFO to 233-733. To learn more about Homeland Security investigations and our efforts to combat human trafficking, please visit our website at www.ice.gov or check out the DHS Blue Campaign at www.dhs.gov/bluecampaign. For more information on the Southern Arizona Anti-Trafficking Unified Response Network, please visit us at www.saturn.org or find us on Facebook.
Law Matters Live Show airs Saturday mornings at 8 when our listeners ask questions of people who have answers. On our next show, our guest will be Border Patrol. We will get an update on what is happening and how the coronavirus has affected their job. This is your show, Arizona, so get your questions ready to join the talk at 790-2040. You don't want to be left out. Set your alarm for AM 1030 The Voice. And we can't do the show without your support. Please go to lawmatters1030.org to contribute. Thanks for staying with us. Our guests today are Tucson Fire Chief Chuck Ryan. Are you on the line? Can you hear me, sir? Hello?
Yeah.
John? Oh, you can hear me? Good.
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yes.
Okay, perfect. And also the Chief of Police, Kara Riley from Oral Valley. How are you? Kara?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. We sound like a Verizon ad, don't we? I want you two to meet each other. Chuck, meet Kara. Kara, meet Chuck. I didn't know you didn't know each other.
We have not met yet. Good morning.
I want to start with the fire chief. I mean, this is a day when typically we have the annual torching of A Mountain, and I think they have postponed it.
Yes.
Thank you. We've had enough excitement in this town. They postponed it. Do you know when they're going to do it? Or is it?
Good morning, Sherry, and thank you so much for having me on the show. This is my first summer, my first 4th of July here in Tucson. And, you know, the decision was made, and it was a tough one. City Manager Mike Ortega and I had a lot of conversations along with the business community and other city department heads. And between you know, really trying to encourage people to distance and not, you know, avoid large gatherings. And then with the enhanced fire danger, with the low relative humidities we've had, the high temperatures, just to avoid any issues, as much as we could sure use a celebration, the decision was made to postpone for a while to a date to be determined.
Okay, that makes sense. Kara, you were in the middle of all this when the fire started. It was on your side of the hill. How exciting was that, and how did it affect your job and everything that was going on?
Well, and again, good morning. Thank you for having me. It was a very difficult time for, obviously, the firefighters on the ground and then the police department assisting with any evacuations and really helping with the ebb and flow of the fire apparatuses coming in and out to make sure that they were able to get in and do the job that they've done. And I really have to take a moment to shout out to all those firefighters out there who've done an amazing job with no structures being damaged. It's just been, it's been phenomenal. And their hard work and tireless work has just been so invaluable for our entire community in Pima County. So we worked with them from the very beginning with the incident management team that was brought in, and we continue to be briefed daily, working with the firefighters, even though right now it's not affecting our community as much. But we've just been helping with the messaging, ensuring that people aren't, you know, parking in areas that are interfering or having drones flying and things like that.
Yeah, the drones. I wouldn't want to be that person. You cause somebody to lose their home or their life just because you wanted to fly a drone. And that goes for any time there's a fire or an incident and emergency equipment are in an area. You don't fly a drone. It just, it's common sense, you would think.
Yeah, it does really cause such a, you know, the last one that we had, I was actually up in the area when it happened off of Golden Ranch and Oracle. And, you know, I was watching all the helicopters and their fantastic work they're doing. And then to have that occur, it then, you know, basically causes all the planes to be grounded. And it just limits the resources that can be done at that time to help out with the fire. So it was some difficult times, and like I said, I can't thank them all enough.
Oh, they're amazing. And I know we had a couple of, at least some Tucson firefighters were up there. Chuck, what were they doing?
So we had, at the state's request, they reached out to us and asked if we could supply a medical resource unit to assist with the Bighorn Fire. So we detailed two of our firefighters who are also wildland firefighters as well, certified as wildland firefighters, and they and one of our reserve EMS transport units, one of our paramedic trucks, were up on the mountain for two weeks from June 15th until the 29th, supporting the hotshot crews and some of the structure protection groups, mainly up in the Oracle area and the area of the biosphere.
I had the opportunity, I had to go up to the town of Oracle and had the opportunity to meet a hotshot from Yuma. And these men came off the hill. They were exhausted. You could tell they were just like barely, they could sleep standing up.
Yeah.
It's a rough job. And you have heat.
Wildland firefighting is a very different construct than urban structural firefighting. It's, you know, in the urban environment, we have fire hydrants and hose and streets and so on and so forth. And then in the wildland environment, it's the exact opposite. You make your way mainly by foot, using hand tools to, you know, build containment lines, some direct attack, but it's a different type of firefighting. Different strategies and tactics are employed, and it is very physically demanding work.
Oh, yeah. When these cactus get hot and they explode, they become projectiles. So you're not just fighting a fire, you're dodging projectiles. So
right.
It can be really harrowing experience. I want to know, how are you preparing for the monsoon season as far as like water rescue?
So the crews have been out doing some training, some really good partnerships with Tucson Parks and Rec, using the pools to simulate retrieving people out of stranded vehicles. And, of course, please, if a roadway is flooded, turn around, don't drown. But we know every year people do this. And where I came from, it was no different. I came to Tucson from Fairfax County, Virginia, in the National Capital Region, and no stranger to severe thunderstorms and flash flooding. And we had the same challenges there, really. Puts everybody in serious risk. And then we also practice for, you know, the wash rescues and the arroyos, and had a good partnership with folks up at Star Pass Resort and use some of their water features to simulate as best we can that scenario, so that our crews are practiced and ready when the actual event occurs.
So you came from Virginia. Did they have water rescue there? It'd be a whole different experience compared to here with the monsoons, wouldn't it?
It's a little bit, again, so the severe thunderstorms tend to go through the National Capital Region, the Washington, D.C. area, typically between the April and now time frame. They're actually kind of getting out of severe thunderstorm season. But Great Falls National Park, the Upper Potomac, flows through Fairfax County, draws a lot of people to the water, and they get in there. And so it's sort of the same challenges, just on a grander scale, and the water is a little bit more constantly flowing than it does here in Tucson, obviously.
Yeah, ours is a temporary situation.
Right, yeah. Right.
So, yeah.
And Sherry, from our perspective, from the town of Oro Valley, we've been working with ADOT in clearing out some of the washes. I'm sure that's going on in the city as well. Because of the potential for some flooding occurring because of the fire. And so that's what we've been really focusing on is the route that the water might take with the partnership with Golden Ranch Fire District as well.
And are they anticipating mudslides?
You know, I would suspect it's possible. Our biggest concern that we're really focusing on, though, is flooding, and we've been pushing out a lot of messaging in reference to the floods and flood insurance just because of all of the vegetation that's been burned. Then there's no way to really stop the water that normally flows and then the soot that will come with it. So that is our next concern with the monsoons, and I'm sure the Chief Ryan certainly knows more than I do on the topic. I've had to get a lot of learning on with it, but we've put together a team here in our area just to start looking at where our concern points are and making sure that those areas are cleared out in the wash so that the water can flow with the natural resources through. So that's our goal, just to avoid any potential flooding.
I know they have a sandbag program in Tucson. Do they have something like that in Oro Valley?
We do, right off of Naranja Park. And so it's like La Cañada, Naranja. They're sandbagging that you can go and get and do yourself. It's right there behind where the archery area is. It's right in that area. And people can go in there and obtain sandbags. And we'll be pushing out a lot more information as we get closer. And then in regards to the police part of the house, is we always have a monsoon plan in reference to washes and roadways that normally we have found are the ones where people will drive through. So we have all of the signs pre-posted out there, so it's just easy for the officers to pull it out. And again, you know, if it says don't go through it, don't. And it's there for a reason. So,
yeah, I watched a car. Nobody was in the car. It was parked. But sometimes mm-hmm. the streets will start flooding a little bit. And
yeah.
The water wasn't deep, but it was moving at a rapid pace. And it picked up the car and took it a couple of blocks and parked it in a ditch.
And, right.
You know, this is just to explain, don't do it. Don't get in the water. I don't care if you can see the bottom. Don't get in the water.
And it goes so quickly, and it just takes over so fast that nobody really anticipates it happening that fast. And so that's where we see the issues occur with the water rescues as well. So it's very scary.
Yeah, it is. And that's why they call it flash flood. You know, and when I first moved to Arizona, I'm from Chicago. So when I first moved to Arizona, they said more people are killed in a flash flood than any other way. And I believe it, because you don't expect it.
You certainly don't expect it. And one thing I did want to also remind people as well, that the county has the alert system, the My Alerts, and if you have to call in and opt into it, I do recommend that the public do that, because it does keep them up on any emergency notifications that are going on in the county. And then the town of Oro Valley has the same program, but it's called Code Red. And so we do want our members, our citizens, to opt into those programs so that they can be notified of any emergencies in their community.
Now, is that a cell phone opt-in, or is it email?
It's a cell phone opt-in, and you can do cell phone, a landline, I believe also email. So it's all on our town website. But the for the people that are listening that are in the county that aren't Oro Valley residents, they have a program called My Alerts, and that also does the same thing.
And that's with Pima County, and you can go on their website and find it. My search and rescue guys didn't tell me about that. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a great program. So I've had to learn all these different things because of the fire, so yeah.
It's amazing. It's on the job training. Every time there's an emergency, it's you always,
right.
I don't care how many times you've done it, you're always going to learn something.
Yep, we can only get better.
Exactly. So, Kara, tell us a little bit about your background. I know you've just been promoted to chief of police, and, you know, I don't think everybody knows about you. You've traveled extensively.
Yes. So I was actually born here in Tucson, but at the very young age of 6 months old, my father is a retired professor from the University of Arizona, and we actually traveled internationally my entire childhood until I was 16. We began first by living in a small island off of Saudi Arabia called Saadiyat. It is one of the wealthiest countries now because oil production has occurred since I was there. That was in 1969. And when I lived there, I lived on an island with three mobile homes. And my father's goal was to teach people how to grow food with the natural resources. Awesome. And so he irrigated the seawater inland, took out the salt. And by the time we left, 3 years later, one ton of food was being shipped out every day. And then I spent 6 years in Taiwan. And then finally, and my most formative years were spent from the age of 11 until 16 in Sudan, Africa. And so I was raised primarily there and then came to the United States for my senior year of high school so that I could get residency to go to the University of Arizona. And during that time, I was able to get my driver's license and consequently got stopped by the Tucson police for speeding. And that was what I say is my aha moment of deciding to go into law enforcement.
There you go.
And as he wrote me a ticket, I began to ask a lot of questions and began my journey. And I started at the Pima County Juvenile Court, and then I went to Pima County Jail working in corrections. And then I became a police officer in 1992 and have just primarily spent my first 13 years in law enforcement as an airport officer, and then came to Oro Valley in 2004 and have been just so fortunate to work with the finest men and women in law enforcement and just had a great career and was recently promoted to the chief in February of this year.
Congratulations on that. That's awesome. Yeah,
Thank you so much.
You've earned it too.
And it's been a busy 4 months.
And I know, too, that you have, what is that program called where you have young children come in and the rookies?
You mean
what are they?
We have the Explorer program.
The Explorer program. I know you have an Explorer program for kids, for youth.
We do. We have quite a robust one. Prior to the COVID, we were holding about 40 kids that were involved, and they're from the age of 14 to 21. And then we spend every week with them where they're able to come in and do different volunteer work, but they really learn about law enforcement. And then if they choose to, it kind of gives them a good segue into applying for other agencies, and we help them out through that process. And then they compete throughout the state with other Explorer posts in different tactics and, you know, hostage negotiations and things like that. So it's a pretty neat program.
Awesome. Does the Tucson Fire Department have an Explorer program or a similar program?
Yep, we absolutely do. There is a Fire Explorers program. Unfortunately, this summer's program has been impacted by COVID, so we're not hosting it this year. Despite a lot of will to have it, it just the right thing to do is to postpone it. But yeah, we do. And it actually proves to be a pretty good ground for recruiting for our probationary firefighter academy. So it's worked out very well for Tucson Fire.
You know, one of the things I learned talking to the hotshots when I was up in Oracle was they have an inmate program where the inmates can, you know, not your axe murderers, but other people that you may be petty theft, I don't know. But they come out and they learn job skills in the firefighting industry. Does the city, I know that's with, I don't know what the name of their program is, do you? But does Tucson have a program like that too?
No. So you mean for like low risk inmates? No.
Correct.
Certainly, well, I say no. Not as regarding Tucson Fire. I don't know if perhaps Parks and Rec, gets some things accomplished that way through like a community labor force type thing, but no, not in the fire department.
Okay, because I was wondering how that would work with, you know, in the urban area as opposed to wildland. So just my mind going wild, I guess. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few. Joey or Saturday mornings at 8 when our listeners ask questions of people who have answers. On our next show, our guest will be Border Patrol. We will get an update on what is happening and how the coronavirus has affected their job. This is your show, Arizona, so get your questions ready to join the talk at 790-2040. You don't want to be left out. Set your alarm for AM 1030 The Voice. And we can't do the show without your support. Please go to lawmatters1030.org to contribute.
To report suspected human trafficking, please call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center at 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP or INFO to 233-733. To learn more about Homeland Security investigations and our efforts to combat human trafficking, please visit our website at www.ice.gov or check out the DHS Blue Campaign at www.dhs.gov/bluecampaign. For more information on the Southern Arizona Anti-Trafficking Unified Response Network, please visit us at www.saturn.org or find us on Facebook.
Getting a reverse mortgage with the new rules and expanded limits can be a positive, life-changing experience. The reverse offers multiple ways of having your equity work for you, from a monthly income, an interest-bearing equity account, or total cash out. Give me a call and let's see which reverse option best works for your future plans. Call 520-310-9900. Ask for me, Sherry. That's 520-310-9900.
The FBI will train its national and international law enforcement partners on indicators of human trafficking throughout the year, which marks the 20th anniversary of the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. The act provides tools to combat trafficking worldwide and requires the FBI to collect data on the crime. All 56 of the FBI's field offices have ongoing human trafficking investigations, more than 1,900 cases. That's an increase in the number of cases over the past several years. Deputy Director David Bowditch.
Most of the cases we see, roughly 90%, are commercial sex trafficking, and they're amongst the most heinous crimes that the FBI encounters.
The FBI's Victim Services Division ensures that survivors have access to emotional support, social services, and medical care.
We have to speak for the victims.
If you are a victim of human trafficking, call or text the National Human Trafficking Resource Center hotline at 888-373-7888. With FBI This Week, I'm Molly Halpern of the Bureau.
Thanks for staying with us. Our guest today is Tucson Fire Chief Chuck Ryan and Oro Valley Police Chief Kara Riley. And our call-in number is 790-2040 if you have any questions. I want to talk about the sale of fireworks, which this makes me nuts. They sell the fireworks, but you're not allowed to use them within the city limits, but people do anyway. What are the laws? And I don't know about Oro Valley. What are the laws up in Oro Valley?
So for us, they're called consumer fireworks, and they are permissible to a point. And really, to get the specific details, people should go to the town website for the ordinance on it. But in essence, if it goes in the air and detonates in the air, those are the ones that we would say are prohibited. If there are the sparklers or the ones that are on ground level, those ones are allowed. So it is kind of a complicated series of differences, and I'm sure that the fire chief can give the better wording than I can. But more importantly, you know, we have the age limit is 16 years and older. You know, it is very, very dry right now, so we're just asking the public to be very cautious with their use, and just remember what goes up must come down. And so that is why we're always very attuned to what's going on, especially during this type of holiday.
So what does the fire department have to say about fireworks?
So the city of Tucson's ordinance is exactly as the police chief described, consumer fireworks, things that don't leave the ground, are permissible within city limits. Things like those little ground spinners, sparkling wheels, fountains, sparklers, although all inherently dangerous, are legal for use within the city. It's the Roman candles, the sky rockets, bottle rockets. You know, like the chief said, science still applies. What goes up must come down, and we don't need flammable items raining down from the sky.
No, we sure don't. You don't want to be the one that's responsible for somebody's house burning down because you had to, you know, use one of those illegal fireworks. And what I don't understand is they're selling every corner in the city, in Costco and grocery stores, they're all selling these fireworks. If it's illegal to use, why are they allowed to sell it?
So, so my, unless they're selling illegally, which I would like to think they're not, the fireworks they are selling qualify as those consumer fireworks that don't go more than a few, if, you know, 4 to 6 feet in the air, nothing that actually launches.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, and that's my understanding as well.
Okay. Because I'm not opposed to fireworks. I know we always look forward to the annual torching of A Mountain. And, you know, I understand it's not happening this year. But I'm always really leery of people just buying fireworks and going off in their backyard and doing what they do, because they're so darn dangerous. And I only say that because I had a horrible experience. I think it was in kindergarten. And little girl down the street and I were both in kindergarten. And her dad handed her a round fireworks. It had a string hanging out of it. And he set fire to the string and told her to throw it. And she couldn't throw it. So mm-hmm. You know what happened. And
yes.
It was ugly.
Yeah.
And I've never forgotten it. And it's just like, you know, I don't want that to happen to anybody else. So use your head before you start playing with fireworks. Even sparklers are dangerous. So.
Oh, yeah, without question. They get intensely hot. Somebody put a good analogy. You know, you wouldn't let your child touch a 400-degree oven that's baking a cake, so why would you hand your child something that burns at almost 1,200 degrees?
Exactly. Exactly. There's got to be so many other ways of celebrating the 4th of July without doing that. And I'm hoping people are getting creative and figuring out those ways. Bake a cake. Do something else. Stay home. So, okay, I want to learn more about the Fairfax Fire Department. I know you were on the rescue.
And what, yes.
Okay. Is it, when they say rescue, is it the way our search and rescue guys from Pima County are, or is it a different kind of rescue?
So the department I came to Tucson from, it's Virginia form of government's largely, there are very few incorporated cities and towns in the Commonwealth of Virginia, much more unincorporated counties, and so there are county police departments, county fire departments. Fairfax County is a suburb, doesn't do it justice anymore because there's 1.2 million people that live there, but about 1,400 firefighters. I served there for just shy of 26 years, retired as an assistant fire chief, back there, the term fire and rescue refers to fire and EMS. So rescue is a holdover term from probably the 50s and 60s as what was referred to before it was known as emergency medical services. But I did serve very proudly, I have to say, with Virginia Task Force 1, which is one of the 28 FEMA urban search and rescue teams in the country. And Fairfax County also has one of only two teams in the nation that are authorized by the State Department to be deployed for international disasters. It was Fairfax County, Virginia, and Los Angeles County, California fire departments. And for just over 15 years, served on those teams as well, both domestically and internationally, deployed to natural and man-made disasters. So it was, the fire service has given me an amazing plethora of opportunities that I probably wouldn't have had in any other career, and happy to bring those experiences here to Tucson.
Let's ask about the COVID virus. Has this affected your job, either of you? Has it affected your job and your team of people in any way?
So for the fire department, yes, in the sense that it really early on, it revealed a few things to us, right? So what we all learned was that just-in-time ordering and supply it works great when it works, but when you really need something that's in high demand, it's hard to get. So in terms of the personal protective equipment, N95 filter respirators, Tyvek gowns, the protective nitrile latex gloves that the paramedics use, the firefighters and paramedics use, all those things, immediately the demand rose, it spiked, and it made it nearly impossible for those of us that needed it to care for patients, not just COVID patients, just our regular patients, very difficult, and very challenging for a period of time. So it forced us to be really creative. It forced our EMS division folks to focus on really right-sizing the response. So we had to change some things. We would normally respond to a medical emergency with an engine company or a suppression unit and a medic truck, and that's a minimum of six people. And we'd all go into the house and, you know, talk to the family and get information about the patient and assess the patient. Well, in COVID, because of, you know, the closed environment and not wanting to spend time around people that are overtly sick, we would have people, if they were capable of it and able to do so, walk outside the home to meet us. We would limit the number of people that went inside. We were wearing a filter respirator, almost like you see a miner wear. It's called a P100 mask. Those sorts of things really changed the dynamic of how we responded to and interacted with the public. I will say this, we are very, very lucky that we've captured in our data nearly 3,000 what we call high-risk contacts with either confirmed COVID patients or patients exhibiting COVID-like symptoms, and have had a very, very, very low number of folks in our workforce who have contracted the virus. The ones who have contracted it have all thankfully recovered and are at work. So we never suffered an operational detriment as a result of it. So we've been very, very lucky in comparison to some other fire departments around the country.
Oh, that's awesome. And I know police work, that's contact sport sometimes. You can't get away from that. So
it is. And like Chief Ryan said, we also had to change a lot of what I call our policing tactics from our agency is very well known for if you call a cop, you get a cop. And so we had to change that just a tick where if we could do our contact on the phone, that was preferred. But obviously there are situations that we actually have to go into the homes. We also respond to a majority of the medical calls with the fire department, just to ensure no criminal activity has gone on. And so we've had to just adjust that a little bit in the sense as well, where instead of going into homes, we have people step out to the home, into the outside of the home for us if they can. There are times that we aren't going to be able to prevent having to go into the home during a critical call, like a domestic violence call. So we had to end up providing a lot of different masks for the officers. Some of them you'll see actually have like a dry fit. They call them a gator, and they can just lift it up over their face quickly. Where we have the issue is that the masks really do muffle the microphone and their ability to communicate to one another and to communicate to the public clearly. As you can imagine, in our industry, it's very important to have clear command. So it's just a balance that we're having. The officers are really working through, even on traffic stops where, you know, they're just having to step further away and put their mask on and things like that. So it has been different. We were very fortunate, though, that back in 2017, one of our lieutenants, John Teachout, along with our emergency manager, had put together a PPE bag for each officer. So we really had the N95s from the get-go. And we were one of the few agencies that was prepared for that sense. But like Chief Ryan said, we're having to, you know, play catch up with getting that backfill, and they call it a burn rate of when we're using them and how many we'll need for the future. And now that it's going into a year and so forth. So it's been challenging.
That's really smart. The logistics of what you're just saying, you were totally prepared. Not everybody was prepared. But when we were watching the firefighting on the hill and the hot shots, the logistics of putting together what all those people needed in, like, you know, a 24-hour period. Here, we have to have this, 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 and put it all together so they could use it.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Well, it is amazing. And I do have to give kudos to the fire industry and profession in general. For years, they have been much more well-versed in emergency management than the law enforcement side of the house. We became very well-versed in it after 9/11. That is where we really saw a change in our profession of becoming much more in tune to what that looked like. But for history's sake, the fire industry has been very good about emergency management. We've played catch-up and now have gotten there as well. And so we work hand-in-hand with Golden Ranch Fire District, every day. and it's invaluable relationship that we have with them.
Well, I used to think, because I've interviewed Tucson Fire several times, and I used to think the biggest difference between the suburbs and the city was the guys in the suburbs would go and get the rattlesnakes out of your yard, and the guys in the city said, good luck with that. So,
and we still do.
Okay.
And I'm glad about that.
That's funny. So we only have a few minutes left. What message do each of you want to give to our listeners moving forward? I know you both have a good idea of what you want to do with your departments and in your vision for the future. Can you share that with us?
Sure.
Sure.
So you want to go first, Tara?
No, go ahead. You're good.
Okay. So from Tucson's fire perspective, obviously for today being, recency, we want everybody to have a safe and enjoyable Independence Day celebration. Be careful out there. We always say we don't want to meet by accident, right? So let's all stay safe. Practice the social distancing, the physical distancing. I know it's frustrating, wearing those face covers, especially in these temperatures is not pleasant by any stretch. I get it, but it's the right thing to do for right now. And then going forward, here's what I will say. Tucson Fire is hiring, and we're in a period where we're going to be running annual recruit academies of about 30 to 35 personnel each year. So I'd really like to encourage the young women and men of the Tucson area to keep an eye out for when we post open application periods. And if you think fire and EMS is for you, we'd love to have you. If you're physically fit and mentally fit and ready to serve people and have a true servant mindset, we'd love to have you.
That's awesome. Let me know when you post that so I can announce it too.
We absolutely will share.
Okay. Carol, what's your vision for the future?
So for my vision for the future is that continuous improvement is we have a very well established relationship with our community, and I cannot thank them enough for their support of the men and women of this agency and frankly the town as a whole. We're really very fortunate to have that great relationship. And so I do want to thank the citizens of Oro Valley for always supporting us through these trying times. And just let everybody know that we will continue with our community engagement. It's going to look a little bit different, but we're going to be pretty creative here in the next couple of weeks with some different programs that we're going to try and roll out that will be virtual. So we are going to continue with that. And if we're going to always have that motto, if you need a cop, call a cop, we'll be there. And like Chief Ryan said, we understand that these are difficult times with social distancing, but we do want to encourage that and limit the gatherings, and we'll all get through this together. It's just going to take some time. So that's really our vision, is that continuous improvement and always here to serve this great community.
That's awesome. And you do have a great community up there. Are you hiring?
We do. So we are hiring laterals right now, meaning those police officers that are already certified. So we just posted a video on our Facebook yesterday, and we'll be doing another one next week. We'll have it open for a couple of weeks and then hopefully be able to hire some Oro Valley officers soon.
So when you say laterals, you're talking to the Tucson Police Department. Hey, you want to come over here and work for us?
I would never say things like that, right? but we do post to all the through Arizona Post, so that notifies all police agencies through the state that we are hiring. So
that's awesome. And your Explorer program, both of your Explorer programs, kind of work into the hiring process once they become of age, mm-hmm. don't they?
They do, and I actually have several officers that work for me now, a couple detectives as well that started off as explorers and worked their way up into getting hired on as police officers, and they've just been fantastic.
That's an awesome mentorship. I just people need to know that they're available for their kids. Rather than sitting home and playing video games, they could be doing something productive in planning for their future. And it works both ways. You can do it and say, hey, this is great, I want to do this for the rest of my life, or, oh, I don't want to do this. But one way or the other, you're going to learn.
Yeah, it's a great program.
I want to thank both of you for coming on and sharing today with us. I know it's a holiday, and Maybe next time we can actually come into the studio. It would be awesome. Right now, they're only allowing me one person. So I thought, you know, I wanted Katie to be able to sing our national anthem to us today. So
she was amazing. Yeah.
Wasn't she awesome? Yeah. Okay.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Sherry.
Okay. I want everybody to stay safe, stay home, and stay tuned. And we'll talk to you next week with Border Patrol.